But yeah, I'm really excited that we have sprouts in our first little attempt at a garden, because I was really worried. I was like, if nothing grows, I'm gonna be so sad.
Yeah, we had started seedlings, and then we were keeping them under a UV inside for a while to make sure that they grew before planting anything outside, just
Yeah.
because the weather was so on and off. But they're so big now that we had to put them outside, but we have a little cover that we're putting over them if it gets below 50, so.
Yeah, it's been up and down here too, but everything seems to still be growing, or at least not dying. So I'm hopeful, but we're supposed to have a big freeze, or not a big freeze. It's supposed to drop below freezing tonight, so we're gonna pull everything in.
Yeah, are you in containers or are you in the ground?
In containers.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got like plastic storage bins that we're drilling drainage holes into, and then using that as the like storage and container for the bigger plants. And then I got some cute like a set of cute pots for some of our smaller flowers and stuff that can go in them.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. I got an app on my phone that made it way easier to like find out if the flower was toxic or not, or the plant was toxic or not to cats.
I always
Because
just use
while
ASPCA.
I'm not always like I'm not a hundred like I'm not terribly concerned about outdoors, because like they're gonna run into whatever they're gonna run into outdoors. The indoor, like our indoor cats, if we were to bring in the flowers and stuff to like make a bouquet or something, I wanted to make sure that it was something that wouldn't hurt them if they got into it.
Right.
Which means that some of my favorite flowers we can't have, but
Yeah.
that's okay.
There's a lot of flowers you can't have.
Yeah, there's so many, and just other plants in general, not even just flowers. But and there are some that are just like, because we're not here permanently, so we can't really get. I'd love to get like a hydrangea or something for outside. Those get so massive that, like it. I don't want to do anything like that if we're not going to be staying at the place, for a long time, if
Right.
forever. And so there's stuff like, like I like crepe myrtles, and I like those kinds of big flowering bushes and stuff.
I have a
And
crepe myrtle tree that used to be in Ada's yard, and it would just like fucking spew its flowers all over everything and get stuck on shit. It was awful.
I like them though. It's a lot of nostalgia for me, because growing up we had several mom had several crepe myrtles planted at the house we lived at in Virginia.
Yep, yeah, makes sense.
And so
They're everywhere here.
yeah. And so it's a little sentimental to me, I
Yeah.
guess. But no, I'm excited to get back in the dirt and everything later on, and I'm hoping that we'll actually see things grow. That would be really cool. We're trying.
Yeah.
We're doing a good job keeping everything watered and the sun and everything like that. So,
Good.
and there's a bunch, like every house over here has a shit ton of tulips, and I don't, or daffodils.
That's,
And
yeah, they spread like crazy too.
yeah, every house has them. We even have them in our backyard. I didn't even notice until I was going trying to find like base like brown components for the composter. And I was like, maybe there'll be like a pile of old dead leaves back here or something. Like, I don't really go in the backyard. And then there's just fucking daffodils. I was like, okay, sure, whatever.
We are currently trying to make dandelion tea. And we just did some pickles, really trying to get more into making and preserving our own stuff here. So it's a good time.
Yeah, I mean, I would really like to do that, get more into it too. And once we have more space and like permanent space, I think that we probably will. Elise is like, we get a house, I'm gonna rent a tiller, we're gonna make a garden. I was like, okay, you're just jamming. This is great. I like to see that you're so motivated
Yeah.
to do something, and it's something we're both enjoying a lot too. So, it's
Good.
a good little date co-hobby thing.
My current date co-hobby thing is going to see titties with my husband.
I mean, that's a good date co-hobby thing.
Burlesque baby.
You're having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
You both get to see titties. Why not?
That's right. It's a good time. Although, I will say, I'd been kind of getting off my my true crime game for a while. I was a little burnt out.
Yeah.
The other day, I watched a video about Ruby Frankie. Are you familiar with? Because you know me, I have a bad mom thing, right? So, like,
yeah.
Have you heard about the Ruby Frankie situation?
I'm not sure. It sounds familiar, but I don't remember.
She was the like family blogger.
Yeah, the YouTube mom or whatever. Yeah,
who like super super duper abused her kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just got sentenced 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's what I was hearing about on TikTok and stuff. I was seeing clips about it, but I hadn't like sat down and like really dove into it.
Yeah, that's one we could do. Eight Passengers channel. It's some Lori Vallow shit.
Yeah, there's the other one too where it's like the I think it was in California. It was the girl who climbed out the window and then went to the neighbors and alerted the police, and like all of her siblings and stuff were like tied to their beds and like hadn't been allowed to like live basically for like their entire lives, and it was super wild.
Yeah, the but, this one is like literal slave labor is happening.
Yeah,
it's crazy. I was like, I felt like that gif of Dr. Phil where he's like, ugh. Which will be hilarious for the listeners to hear and not have any idea what I just did.
I think they'll know. If they're real ones, they'll know.
Yeah. So, yeah. There's been some interesting stuff coming out of Lori Vallow's life, though.
Oh, yeah?
She's in Arizona court right now. They're starting the jury selection for her Arizona case against Joe? No. How did I forget his name? Joe is her first husband. What is his name? Mr. Vallow.
William?
No. God. Charles. Charles Vallow. Against him. Her brother killed him and was like, oh, I got hit on the back of the head with a baseball bat guy. You're nodding, but I don't know that you remember. So.
No, I was just looking over the... Looks like there was a William Ligonia or something that was her second husband, and then must be like the third then.
There was William might have been her second. I think Joe might have been her third, and Charles might have been her fourth.
Crazy ass men.
Yeah. But yeah, she is going to trial for Charles's death in Arizona. So that jury selection will be happening in less than a week at the time of this recording. So
wow.
You know, I'll keep you posted.
Yeah. I was like, are you going to be covering it, talking about it?
Probably not to the same level that I did 4-part series on her first trial, but yeah.
Unless it goes absolutely.
If it goes bananas, I'll be there. Yeah.
They start coming out with some wild evidence and stuff.
Yep. One of the jurors just came out and started talking about the trial too. I haven't listened to him yet.
You said one of the jurors came out, and my brain was just like, good for him.
And I don't know if I remember telling you this, John Pryor was trying to get out of being Chad's attorney.
Uh-huh.
He is locked in as the attorney.
Womp womp.
Yeah. Join the Discord if you want to know more about what's going on in the trial.
All right. Welcome to The Strange and Unusual, where we discuss the strange and unusual. This is episode 185 of our series, seeking out the weird, the unexplained, and the devious from around the world. I'm Roya.
And I'm Casey.
And I am going to be talking about the cult of the Church of Jesus Christ Restored.
Ooh.
And one brave woman who wanted out.
I don't know this cult. I'm excited.
So you can find us on all social medias. We're on Facebook, Instagram, X, Threads, and everything, and some iteration of the Strange and Unusual podcast. We're also on Patreon at patreon.com/strangeunusual, and you can get access to our Discord and everything through our Patreon, and all of that will be at the end of the episode in more detail, as well as in the show notes, if you know, for copying and pasting or whatever, and we would love to hear from you guys.
Yeah.
So let me get my notes because they decided to close. Okay.
I saw this meme the other day that it was like, podcast 45 minutes into the episode. Well, let's dive right in. Like, that feels like us right now. Talking about bullshit for the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's whatever. So, wee-woos, cults, polygamy.
Ooh.
Rape.
Oh.
Abuse of every type, really. mishandling of a corpse, and child marriage.
I don't think I'm gonna like this episode.
No.
Cool.
Okay, so Carol Christie was a happy child, high energy, and loved the outdoors like many children born in the 50s and 60s, especially. Her mom did not see the beauty in the world like she did, though. She believed the world was evil and that one day God would destroy it.
Wow. What a great attitude.
Yeah. Carol's dad was busy with work. He worked like two different jobs to try to keep the family. Because again, this is the 60s. So nuclear family, mom's not working. Dad's working two jobs. And he didn't recognize fully the extent of his wife slipping into like doomsday cult beliefs.
Oh.
To like intervene in time. It was in Owen Sound, Ontario, in the 60s that Carol's life would take a dramatic and traumatic turn. Her mother joined a new church and started taking Carol with her. The church was led by a charismatic Mormon minister named Stan King, and the church was called the Church of Jesus Christ Restored.
I just realized what his name is pushed together. Stankin.
So, Stan believed that God had spoken to him and that it was his destiny to be the next prophet.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
As they do.
And Carol's mother began to earn the trust of Stan and was brought into the inner circle of the church over time, where there was just more ick going on under the surface.
Hmm.
So, Carol was a sheltered teenager at the time and kept from much of the experience of the world outside of her family's in the church. Her family in the church. So, when her mother sat her down one day and said out of the blue, quote, God has a special calling for you. He wants you to be Stan King's wife.
No. Quote,
Carol was stunned.
Yeah.
Stan already had a wife. And Carol was only 17 years old at the time, and she was not interested in a man that was double her age.
Yeah, that's gross, Mom.
Yeah. And now, remember, Stan King was from a Mormon base, which means that depending on which aspect he believes on from the Book of Mormon, polygamy might be on the table.
Yeah.
Now, for those of you that did not get really into watching Sister Wives like I did, don't worry, I think Robin sucks too. Let's do a quick rundown on polygamy and Mormonism.
I did not watch Sister Wives, but I did watch basically every documentary I could find on the FLDS. So I know something.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just not TLC rated. It's worse.
Yeah. So polygamy is no longer practiced in the mainstream Mormon church or LDS. However, some splinter sects still do practice it and are considered FLDS or fundamentalist Latter-day Saints. And someday when Casey and I really want to be sad, we'll tackle Warren Jeffs.
No, we will not. He's terrible. I cannot do it.
But this will be a warm up.
Yeah, that's sure.
There were a lot of reasons for polygamy in the early Mormon church, and whether it was more than, you know, just a man wants more variety or not, is kind of unimportant to what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
The debate of it is whatever, but these are the actual, like, doctrine and reasons they believe in this. So, polygamy was seen, quote, as more important than baptism. In the early years of the LDS church, and Brigham Young said that any male member of the church who was commanded to practice polygamy and refused it would be damned.
Fuck.
And this is sort of the vibe that I've gotten from, like, the trash TV I've watched about polygamy, including members of the FLDS or, like, people who are practicing polygamy, faith-based polygamy, feel called to do it, like God picks some and not others. And it's a thing that the man feels he is called to, specifically the man normally.
Well, yeah, they wouldn't let a woman have more than one husband.
So in the late 1800s, a newspaper owned by the church stated that there would be no exaltation without polygamy, speculating that men and women who refused to practice it would have lesser stations in the
They don't get their own planet?
No.
Aw, bummer.
The FLDS believed that a woman could secure her place in heaven by marrying a righteous man.
Mm-hmm.
And some women embraced it because of the teachings and the desire to go to heaven, as the salvation of women was dependent on their status of being a wife. So you can't get into heaven if you're not married, ladies. So sorry.
Bummer.
You're safe.
No.
You're married.
Barely.
A big part of polygamy was also to increase the Mormon population through childbirth, with the Millennial Star, a church-based paper, stating in an article that children from monogamous marriages are often physically and mentally lesser than children from a polygamous marriage.
False.
Yeah.
I will fight that person.
And I was also seeing that there are some statistics stating that polygamy does not actually increase the number of children, like, that a woman is likely to have, like, that a family would produce. Like, there's not more children, because it would just be, like, each wife would have a husband.
As opposed to, like, then, Michelle Duggar, who has 21 children, it would be multiple women having 21 children.
Exactly.
Got it.
But, you know, that they would be spread out, like each member, using the example of sister wives, you know, that each of the wives would have a husband, and then they would have, like, their five kids, and their five kids, and their one kid, and their three kids, you know, and separate with independent husbands versus the same husband.
Okay.
And polygamy was also argued as a way to prevent men from falling into sexual temptation, while monogamy increases the likelihood of that temptation. So if you've got some variety is the spice of life.
If you got a lot of pussy, you don't need a lot of pussy.
Yeah, you don't need extramarital pussy.
That's right.
That's the episode.
You know, I said I don't want to do an episode on War of Depth, but I did just talk about Michelle Duggar, and now I really do want to do an episode on the IFB.
Yeah. So also the biggest reason why it was practiced is that it was taught in the Bible. And if anybody has seen the Book of Mormon, we all know that the Bible is a trilogy and the Book of Mormon is Return of the Jedi.
That's right.
So back to Carol Christie. Her moms brought in this whole deal, right? I misspoke. So back to Carol Christie, her moms bought this whole deal, right? Like, Stan King is talking to God, and God is like, hey, Stan, you should totally marry that 17-year-old. And Stan's like, all right, bet. I guess I'll marry that 17-year-old.
My name's Stankin'.
It's all because God told me to, and not at all the fact that I want to bang an underage child.
Mm-hmm. I'm Stan King. I'm stankin'. And I'm gonna, with a child.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be stinking with a child.
Oh, God. Stop.
The fact that his name is Stanking is so funny.
So because her mother is all in on this, of course, Carol is just given up to Stan King. Because in the belief system they're following, it would ensure that Carol's whole family got to go to heaven because Carol was marrying such a righteous man. She was marrying a prophet. Now, not that this is the point, but can you imagine the fucking pressure? Like, sweetie, you have to go marry this guy who's double your age and you think is disgusting because otherwise mommy won't get into heaven.
Yeah, no pressure. Like, don't worry about
it. Do you want to damn the entire family to hell, honey?
Yeah.
Then go marry Stinking.
Her dad just didn't give a shit?
So her dad, I think at this point, is kind of out of the picture.
Oh.
They moved, and it sounds like he stayed in Ontario.
Bummer.
That comes up a little bit later.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. The documentary I watched wasn't very clear on what happened there. It kind of sounds like the mom pulled, like, I'm gonna go to Jonestown, and dad was like, best of luck with that, and thought that the mom had her daughter's best interest in mind, and it's not
wrong.
Mom had the best interest in her mind in mind for the child, which is not the best interest a sane person would have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So her mother told Carol that she was going to give birth to special children, sons that would go on to do great things for God. Stan had told her that she was going to have sons and it was going to be incredible and blah, 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 blah.
I hate this so much.
Yeah. That was not enough to move Carol, obviously.
Yeah.
And she recounted beginning to cry hysterically because it was so disgusting to her. In the episode of Who the Bleep Did I Marry I watched about this, Carol said, quote, "From that point on, my life was sheer hell," end quote.
Mm-hmm. Poor thing.
So Carol was so opposed to this, her mother resorted to actually drugging her with sedatives in order to calm her down to even, like, function. And she said that she felt like a walking zombie and she was starting to lose herself. I think that she probably had to separate her true self from this new situation in order to try to have any hope of salvaging herself once all of this was gone, was done, you know? And had to just kind of lock it away, unfortunately. Because, again, remember, she's 17, guys. And this all started when she was 16 and into 7. But there was a member of the church that lived in Owen Sound, and Carol was invited over to a get-together at their house. Over time, at the gathering, the other members left, leaving Stan alone with Carol.
Mm.
She said at first this was fine. They were joking, chatting, but then Stan suddenly moved on top of her and she started screaming. Stan called Carol's mother to come pick her up.
Yeah.
A few days later, the same woman that invited her over called her mom to bring Carol back over to her house. And when Carol got there, the church member started yelling at, berating her for rejecting Stan.
She's a child. Carol,
yeah.
Cool. Just making sure we all agree.
Yeah. Carol's mother continued to work on manipulating and changing Carol into someone else until finally Carol gave up.
Oh, Carol.
And in 1971, Carol moved to Stan King's farm where he established a commune with about a dozen followers. This time she was 8. The commune was not far away from Toronto, Canada. And in the episode, John Tamming, an attorney who gets involved in the situation later, wanted to stress that cults can take place anywhere. They can happen in cities and towns just as easily as they can happen in rural Utah or jungles in South America.
Mm-hmm.
They can literally be in the house next door to you and you would never know. So Stan King's legal wife, Erna, lived on the farm as well as Stan and Erna's sons, Judd, Joe, and Fred.
Wow.
All now part of Carol's family.
What name? Judd.
Yeah.
Judd Nelson?
I hope not. Stan and Erna's sons were actually closer to Carol's age, which is super gross.
Yeah. And they were just like cool with it?
No.
Oh, cool.
Fred was actually not a fan of Carol or his father for taking more wives and upsetting the normal life that Fred had grown accustomed to. That's important later. And Carol, like any good religious girl, was saving herself for marriage, having dreamed of finding the right young man and having a romantic, love-filled life. Instead, she got to be Stan King's fourth church wife.
Blech.
Yeah. Now, there's a difference you may have noticed. And this is something that I learned more about, again, in Sister Wives. But so there's one legal wife who has all the paperwork, the power of attorney, all that kind of stuff. And then there are church wives who have no legal binding paperwork or real legal power in the relationship. And they're considered to have had spiritual marriages with their husbands since they cannot have legal ones.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference between bigamy and polygamy, is that bigamy is having multiple marriages. Legal lives,
yeah.
Yeah, and polygamy is having multiple wives with one or none or no legal wives. And this is all different than polyamory.
Mm-hmm.
So as a wife of the prophet, fourth or otherwise, Carol was expected to have sex with Stan. But she couldn't bring herself to do it. She started to learn the ins and outs of the farm and how to take care of the chores and the things there. Like they raised turkeys and pigs, she said, on kind of a large scale, I'm assuming, like in an effort to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And she was not allowed to drive, but she was allowed to go on walks and often did in her free time just to try to get away from all of the people.
Yeah.
But finally, Stan had enough of her resistance and ordered Carol to bed, determined to have sex with her.
God, that makes me sick.
Yeah, Carol didn't want to go. She was terrified. She had no idea what was going to happen because obviously no one had ever told her or taught her anything.
Yeah.
remember, not only is she a member of a repressed and sheltered society, but this is also the 70s, so access to any sort of education outside of the parents or school would have been hard, if not impossible, to get a hold of. And Carol recognizes now that there was a lot of psychological manipulation that happened, especially at this time for her, that pleasing the prophet became her top priority because it was the only way to kind of ensure some calm consistency in her life. This one's rough. So Stan brought in another wife, Lolly, who he would have sex with in bed while Carol was in it. And Lolly was 10 years old. The psychological manipulation continued and got worse. Carol learning to become obedient as a means to survive, to just do what Stan wanted her to do.
I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on 10 years old.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
That was there was also evidently a 14-year-old at some point
too. Ugh, I hate this man and I hope he's dead.
We'll get there.
Cool.
At the time, the punishment was simple. If you didn't please the prophet, no one in the house would speak to you. You were punished through loneliness in an already lonely life. And Carol stated that the sexual encounters would get just continue to push boundaries. And eventually became group sex, and that was the worst. Her days weren't a ton better. Long hours of hard work for no pay, working on the farm, tending to the chores of the house as well as the animals. Of course, cults need money, just like the rest of us, so everything was for profit, and the profit was high when you didn't have to pay people.
Mm-hmm.
So Stan developed a health food business, which Carol dove headlong into, finding some solace in the work that she was doing there, and because she wasn't able to be in contact with her family, so it kind of gave her something to focus on that was constructive. She was building something, she was creating something, it wasn't just the terrible life she was currently living. And she even remarked in one of the interviews, you know, like, I always kind of had a head for business. And so she it was something she had wanted to do before this all happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
So she really took well to it. Her mother had moved to Missouri because the cult told her to, and her father remained in Ontario and rejected the religion fully and completely. Stan didn't want Carol's dad around because he knew that her dad would try to get to her and influence her to leave.
Right? Yeah, because he's a good fucking dad, not like you, yeah. Dick.
I'm
ready to personally fight this man.
She mentions that she was, when she was in her 20s, she had quite a large a cyst on her ovary that had to be surgically removed, that had been hindering her from getting pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was removed, and then she became pregnant like 3 months after that, at 23, and about a month and a half before her son was born. Carol's dad became concerned. He didn't know she was pregnant, but all of his calls to the farm had been turned away, saying that Carol was unavailable. So he was like, well, I just want to fucking talk to my daughter.
Right.
So he reached out to the police to request them to go out and check on her. Carol wanted to be saved, but when the police got there, Stan ordered Carol to hide. The police did not pressure Stan to see Carol, instead taking the word of the overly charismatic cult leader.
Ugh.
And Carol was too far gone at this point to disobey Stan either, because what if the police didn't believe her?
Poor fucking lady.
After the run-in with the police, Stan King decided that he needed to lock Carol in even more, and made Carol marry his son, Joe King, in order to protect Carol, her son, and the cult as a whole, because it was done to cover up the fact that Stan had multiple wives.
Mm-hmm.
You can't exactly go in with, you know, the fourth wife to have a kid this year and be like, oh yeah, this is also my kid. People are going to get suspicious eventually. And Joe King never even touched Carol. Like, that wasn't a thing. It was a fully a sham marriage.
Sorry, you said that so fast. We have stanking and joking. And I was like, but that's, I mean, it's good he didn't touch her, right? She didn't want to be touched.
Yeah, I don't think she wanted to be touched by anybody.
Yeah.
So in 1977, Carol gave birth to her first child, and 18 months later had her second son. Both of them sons. Her sons?
So I guess mom wasn't wrong.
Yeah. Her sons brought some contentment to Carol's life, though, giving her something bright, even in all the dark evil that she was living with. Fred King was not happy with Carol, and especially not happy now with her sons. He would torment them and tease them. He would change rules to things so he ensured that they got punished. Just kind of petty things like that, driven by jealousy that his father had new sons.
Bitch, they don't want to be here.
Well, they don't know anything different. But, like, it's also the fact, like, this is what he married. Did I get the date on when he married her? 1971. So, like, 6 years later.
Mm.
And he's still this fucking mad about it.
Yeah, die mad, dude.
And by 1982, the cult grew to over 80 members, and Stan King bought a printing company. He also bought a ski lodge for his growing flock so they could all have a commune. And by 1986, Stan had 6 wives and 10 children. Wow. Which, like, realistically, by, like, Mormon standards, is not a lot of many. Kids.
Yeah.
Especially for 6 wives. Like, not saying that I want them to have had more children, but, like, I expected, like, 20.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yep, I agree with you.
One day, Carol received a call from another one of Stan's wives saying that they thought Stan was having a stroke and he was asking for her specifically.
Oh, darn. I'll be right there.
After some testing, it was determined that Stan had 2 aneurysms on his brain, and the only way to save him would be him having surgery.
Oh, no.
Stan refused the surgery.
Oh, no. How sad.
And returned home to die among his wives, children, and the church members. Carol saw him take his last breath and felt his last heartbeat.
Bye, bitch.
Fred was angry and blamed Stan's death on the church members. He also decided to try to resuscitate his father, which of course didn't do anything. And he was convinced that Stan would rise from the dead and ordered Carol to care for Stan's body, you know, when he came back.
Oh, it's one of these. Okay.
Yeah. She had to clean the body every day, even as the body was clearly decomposing.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. She said that it is the worst smell.
Yep.
She had ever experienced, and she can never forget it, and everything smelled like it. Like, there was no escaping it. No amount of washing your clothes got rid of it. It was just always there.
She's stinky.
Yeah.
That decomp. She do that.
Yeah. After a week, finally someone from the church intervened and said that Stan needed to be buried, and Fred agreed and called the authorities. Of course, in doing that, it meant that they had to talk to the police and explain why this body had been left to decompose for a week.
Yeah.
So they told the police that Stan's legal wife, Erna, had not been able to part herself from the body of her husband, and she had needed more time with him. The police accepted this excuse. I mean, I can kind of get that, like, not saying that I would do the same, but, like, I can see as a police officer being like, oh, yes, this clearly advanced age woman just had a hard time reconciling the fact that her husband died.
I mean, sure, but, like, they already came and fucked up one.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna talk shit.
Yeah. So that's the end, right? The end of this terrible cult led by a pedophile prophet?
I mean, God, I hope so. But you know what? I just want to say real quick.
Uh-huh.
The fact that this lady, they're trying to pass this lady off like she's fucking Jean Stevens. Throwback to that episode. No. I need to stand up for Jean in this moment.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you can proceed.
So, no. It is not the end of this.
Did Fred take over?
Yep. Stan had prophesied years before that Fred would take over his position as the head of the church and the next prophet.
Oh, yeah.
And if Love Stan this. Was bad, Fred was worse.
Well, we knew this.
Yeah. When Fred took over, Carol and her 2 sons were immediately removed from the farm to go live in Guelph.
Say it
again. Which is just Guelph.
Guelph. Where's Guelph?
I don't know. It's in Canada somewhere. Literally just the most disgusting city name I've ever heard, I think. To live with another church wife, Angie, and her children.
Okay.
So Carol had been involved with this for so long that she would even return to the farm every weekend for church, even though it was over 2 hours away both ways. So she's riding, or driving or riding for 4 hours every weekend to go and listen to a man she hates talk about a religion she's not sure she believes in.
Poor woman.
Her children had never lived in a town before. And Angie didn't really like Carol either. And Carol had taken a cleaning job and had to hand over all the money to Angie.
Why does everybody hate Carol?
I don't know, man.
Fuck these people.
With Stan dead, though, she was able to relax some into the life in Guelph. She'd already been doing the cleaning at the farm for free, and she dealt with people who didn't like her all of her life. So all she had to do was get her sons acclimated to living in a city, and she could just chill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, her abuser was dead. She was 2 hours away from the other one. She was fine. Until a call came a year later, and her comfort was shattered when Angie told her that word had come that Fred was not only taking over the church, but also taking over all of Stan's wives.
Stop it.
Yes. His father's church wives. Yike.
Oh. But he hates her, so why would he want... I mean, power. Power is gross.
Yeah.
Gross.
That's what rape is all about.
Yeah.
He came to the apartment and ordered Carol to take off her pants and get in bed, and he raped her. She felt degraded and disgusted.
Yeah.
Fred had been viewed as her stepson, and he was the half-brother of her own children. But in her mind, she had no choice but to comply.
Ugh.
Fred's preaching was also different from Stan. He was more aggressive and punished the parishioners if they fell out of line with his expectations. They talked about it a little bit in the episode that the first leader of a cult has to be charismatic and in order to win people over. But then the second leader doesn't because the people are already there and they're already stuck.
It's like the Moonies. What are they now? The Universal something or other. His son took over and it's like all about guns now.
Yeah. So Carol recounted an elderly woman. She said that she was in or around her 80s, and she had fallen asleep during a church service. And she was forced to stand up and push her pants down to her ankles and remain like that for the rest of the service. Fred physically assaulted people, and if anyone tried to intervene, it was just made worse for them.
Get the fuck Carol, out, people.
Yeah, Carol could remember that Fred's son's birthday was coming up, and she and one of her own sons wanted to buy him a present. So they had no money, because Carol had to turn over every last cent to Angie to turn over to the church. Carol and her sons went out in their free time and picked raspberries for a local farm, and were paid, and they used that money to buy books that they wanted to give Fred's son for his birthday. Angie, being in Fred's pocket, tattled on Carol, and the following Sunday, Fred asked Carol to step outside with him. She tried to explain to him what was going on, what the money was for, and he grabbed her by the shoulders and slammed her back into a stone pillar until she fell unconscious. Her clothes were ripped, her nose was bleeding, and her mouth was bleeding, and one of the other church wives was sent out to get her something to wear by Fred. Carol says in the episode that she continues to struggle with chronic pain in her back and neck as a result directly of that beating.
Mm.
When Carol's eldest son was 30, he told Carol that he was leaving the church. He didn't want to leave her and his brother, especially because he knew that they were both going to get in trouble for him leaving, but he couldn't keep going and dealing with the punishments. And just like he assumed, because the eldest son left, Carol was further punished by Fred. A year later, Carol was sitting in church and started looking around at everybody and said, "I need to remember everyone's faces here because this is the last time I'm ever going to see." She decided that she had had enough and that it was her turn to leave. She packed her clothes and made all the arrangements to leave. She tried to convince her younger son to leave with her, but he wouldn't go. In fact, he tried to physically bar his mother from getting out.
Oh, wow.
He was terrified of going to hell. He finally relented and let her go with her entire world in 2 garbage bags and was picked up by her older son. This was the first taste of freedom Carol had had in 37 years of being in the cult.
Wow.
She and her elder son moved back to Owen Sound and she got a job cleaning offices. There wasn't always enough food, but she was free and making her own money, so it was the best she thought her life was ever going to get. until she met John Christ. Carol was cleaning the radio station where John worked, and a friendship blossomed between the two. John asked Carol out to dinner, and she surprised herself by saying yes. And their friendship grew into a romantic relationship, and Carol was totally smitten.
Aw, Carol.
After they were together a few months, she decided to tell him everything. About the cult, about the abuse, about Stan, all of it. And he recalled her telling him that it was okay if he wanted to leave her after finding out what had happened in her life. And he told her he was planning on staying. Of course, he couldn't move their relationship forward until the sham marriage to Joe King was dissolved.
Mm-hmm.
The divorce was completed, uncontested, and John and Carol happily wed. While out at dinner, Carol's favorite coat that John had given her was stolen out of the coat rack. And that was the final straw for her. She was done being a victim, and she wanted to go after Fred King.
Girl, get it. Yes, slay.
She pursued legal actions against Fred King by reaching out to John Tamming for his help as a local attorney. John was stunned by what Carol Christie had told him had happened to her and other women of the cult over the years she was involved with it. They filed a civil suit laying out all of the abuses, physical, sexual, financial, and psychological, and there was a price attributed to each instance of it. John Tamming in the episode says that the only way to go after somebody like Fred King is to go after their wallet.
Mm-hmm.
In February of 2010, Fred was served papers, and John Tamming said that meeting Fred was like meeting evil. Fred's lawyers settled the case with one stipulation. Carol Christie may never go public with the dollar value she got. Carol said she was, quote, quite happy about it, end quote. And John Christie recalled the bank teller remarking that it was the largest check she had ever deposited in her long career at the bank.
Wow. Good for you, Carol. You shouldn't have gone through all that, but I'm so happy that you found love and a big fat check in your bank account.
Yeah. And John Tamming, the attorney, remarked to her, you know, as long as the dollar amount is never disclosed, you can do anything you want with the story. That was the only stipulation they put in place. She could write a book. She could go to the media. So she did both.
Yeah, good.
The media reporting on it would draw renewed attention to the cult by the police. They were interested in getting all the information that they could on Fred King to arrest him. When word got to Fred, he disappeared.
Mm.
But on April 11th, 2014, Fred was discovered at a motel where he was arrested for assault. Fred was sentenced to 18 months in jail for the physical assault and ended up spending 12 months actually, like, in jail. This was because there was a plea bargain that was established because there was a concern that the witnesses, who were all escapees from the cult, would not be willing to go to a trial over it because they were all so afraid. Intimidated and afraid of Fred. So they dropped the sexual aspects of the charges and just stuck with the assaults. And that's why his sentence feels light.
It does seem light.
You know. And Carol Christie actually helped five other escapees sue Fred King successfully.
Good.
And she continues to advocate for escapees from this cult as well as other cults.
Hmm.
And let me look up her book. Her book is, I knew it was Property. I didn't remember the rest of it. Property: The True Story of a Polygamous Church Wife.
Hmm.
And it looks like it's still available if anybody is interested in picking that up. To read it if you want to know more from a direct source on a situation like this. But yeah, I mean, while everything that she had to go through was terrible and I wish that she never had to go through it, I'm happy that at least at the end she got John out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And her two sons, or at least her one. I couldn't find anything if her other son got out or not. At least in the articles I was looking at, it wasn't specified. I hope he did.
Me too.
I hope they're all settled in. And John Christie was even, like, he was on, like, the city council, and he's done, like, he's kind of a little bit of a mover and a shaker in the city. And he just seems like looking at them, they're a very cute couple. Mm-hmm. Especially because they're both, like, older at this point now. Mm-hmm. But, like, if you just wanted to cast, like, a Santa and Mrs. Claus, like, they're perfect.
I gotta look them up.
They're so cute. And I'm happy that, like I said, that if, despite everything she had to go through, I'm happy that at the end she at least got that romance she had hoped for when she was 16.
Yeah, they are cute. He does look like Santa.
I know, he's so nice on the episode and stuff. Like, he's just, he's so there for her.
Fred is disgusting.
Yeah, and Stan just looks like the fucking Jonestown to me every time I see a picture of him.
Jim Jones?
Yeah, it's the glasses.
My brain wanted to say Tom Jones, and I was like, that is the wrong, that's the wrong guy.
That's the wrong Jones.
Nothing wrong with Tom Jones, as far as I know.
I'm not aware of anything. Let's hope.
It's not unusual. You know,
but
I gotta tell you, my favorite Tom Jones song is actually Sex Bomb.
I have not listened to a lot of Tom Jones.
You should listen to Sex Bomb. It's hilarious.
Okay.
Oh, Sex boy. Bomb. Sex Bomb.
He's one of those musicians that I feel like I've probably heard a lot more of his music than I think I have, but I just didn't realize it was him.
It's Not Unusual is the big one. Delilah's a pretty big one. Yeah, there's some good ones that you don't realize are him until you're listening to him and going, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sex Bomb, 10 out of 10. Well, thanks for joining us today as we discussed polygamy, cults, and Carol Christie. And now we want to hear from you. Send your stories, your questions, and your feedback to strangeunusualpodcast@gmail.com. If you're sending a story, we just ask that you put listener story in the subject line so that we can sort through those a little more easily. As always, do you know somebody in a cult? Have you been the victim of a cult? I want to know. I want to hear your story.
Tell us all your cult stories,
please. I want the cult insider info.
It's something that's so, like, I'm always so curious about it because I'm so curious as to, like, how, I mean, obviously, like, if you're born into it, that's one thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's, that's got to be so much harder to escape being mm-hmm. born into it like that. But, like, if you joined it, like, why? What happened?
Yeah. And so
how did they earn your trust to, like, put up with all of this that, you know, you wouldn't have from anyone else? Like,
I saw a quote the other day and I was like, if you think you're too smart to be roped into a cult, you're wrong.
Yeah. 100%.
I was like, I think I'm too smart to be roped into a cult. Like, how would they get me?
But that's the thing, is that it's always the reason why cult leaders are never, like, unsociable. They're right. Never, they always seem genuine. They always seem interested and engaged and things like that with you. So it's easy for them to start manipulating and twisting things without you even realizing that they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting to a point, it's getting it to the point where you are doing things that you know are morally wrong, but you're doing them because your cult leader told you to, that I'm like, I want to know what that switch is.
Yeah.
Like, where does that get flipped?
You know which one I'm really interested in looking into more, and maybe I'll do an episode on it, but the, like, the Nexium cult?
Yeah.
Because it's not really religious, from what I understood. It was, like, all about self-help sort of stuff, and then just almost like a MLM situation.
Yeah.
So, maybe we'll just do an episode on it. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe we'll do Cults Week.
Cult Week! Or Cult Month! Something like that.
There's fucking enough of them.
There are so many. IFB, like, did you watch, do you watch that documentary?
Which one?
The one about the Duggars.
Uh-uh.
Hold on, I gotta find the name. It was, like, Happy Something People. Shiny
Happy
Shiny People.
Shiny People. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I haven't. I mean to, but I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah. There's that one, and then there's one that's called Let Us Pray, and that's about IFB also, what I want to watch, but.
Yeah, and isn't there, there's the Keep Sweet.
That one's the FLDS.
Yeah.
Because IFB is International Fundamentalist Baptist, so they're not Mormon. They're just crazy.
Yeah.
They're just crazy. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead. Proceed with the outro.
Christian fundamentalists.
Hmm?
There's another show that I was watching with, like, Duggar-like people, and I wasn't sure. I knew it was religious-based, but I didn't know, like, what. I knew it was Christian. I knew they weren't Mormon, but
the Plath.
Yeah, You can also find us on Instagram and Threads at strange_unusual_podcast. Our personal accounts, Roy Rampage and Calamity Casey. You can find us on X at _strangeunusual, at Calamity Casey, and at Roy Rampage. We're also on Facebook. Just search for the Strange Unusual podcast. I am also streaming on Twitch at twitch.tv/RoyRampage. And you can join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/strangeunusual, where we have access to our Discord, access to old bonus episodes, rants, Casey reading smut, polls. There's a lot of stuff all going on over there for $2 a month, but we understand right now that times are tough and shit's expensive, and you might not be able to support us financially. If you're unable to, we just ask that you like, share, subscribe, rate, review, share us with your friends, share us with your enemies, share us with your cult escapees, and then tell them to email us mm-hmm. their stories of their cult.
Yep. Or come on the show. Let's talk about it.
Oh, yeah. That would be wild. And if you leave us a 5-star review where we can see it, I'm only aware of Apple Podcasts. I will read it on air as long as it is not gross. It can be mean. It's not gross.
Yeah. Well, bye.
Cult time, baby.